Welcome to our podcast, Bits and Pieces. This is a show about how to get things done and love your work. We got a lot of things done lately, which means we did a lot of work. We're not going to tell too much about that today, but because it has been a long time since we last talked to you, we want to tell a little bit about the most important things maybe that we were up to. We are Luki.
And Toby.
So, Toby, what were you up to for the last month or two?
Yeah, as you said, there was a lot of work. Maybe the most interesting stuff for me was research about the startup scene in the Nordics. I discovered there are a lot of institutions, associations, and I looked into the cities of Helsinki, Stockholm, Oslo and Copenhagen. What I very quickly saw in all those places is that the less informal the institutions or associations are, the more successful they tend to be. So the less governmental organization is behind them, and the more it comes from bottom up, the more members they have, the more excitement is there, and the more is going on. Mm-hmm. It was, of course, quite obvious that this works really well in Helsinki with Startup Sauna, for example, which really started from bottom up by students. And also in other cities, it had quite exciting movements in that way. For example, the most interesting one for me personally was in Copenhagen, where the whole startup community, or a big part of the startup community, founded an association, non-profit association, which is called hashtag KPHFTW, so Copenhagen for the win. And every startup kind of put money in there. There are 86 founding members. I'm not sure about the number, but I think it was something 80. And they all just put a little money in there, as much as they could afford, to start a website, a web platform, where all the startup-related institutions, newspapers, and events are recorded in Copenhagen. And they also use that hashtag for the social networks to kind of gather all the news regarding startups in Copenhagen under one roof. That's really useful.
Yeah, I think that's probably the coolest thing I find about this all, that they have the perfect branding going on. Everything runs under one hashtag, so you really can find everything in all the different places with just that one word that you need to remember pretty much. It's really cool, and I think probably this might be something that happens more and more in the future, that you use one hashtag to identify yourself, because hashtags really get their place into our everyday lives more and more. I mean, everybody's using them, everybody's talking about them. So if you manage to have all your branding circled around the hashtag, that's really, really cool. Smart idea right there.
Yeah, and I absolutely can't wait to visit a lot of those places, not just in Copenhagen, but around in all Northern Europe and maybe also Central Europe at some point. Just to see what's going on, how does it feel, what type of startups are there. Because in Helsinki, we are really game-related, and also a lot in the health area is going on. But it's mostly about apps, which I guess is kind of everywhere, the biggest part. But I would be really excited to see how the different environments maybe developed in a diverse way.
I think apps are always the easiest, because you pretty much don't need any investment. As long as there are some students who own a computer already, they might do some programming at the site. So there is very little that you need to invest into infrastructure or resources that you need. Everything is brain power, and then you just need to make it work somehow. But if you are a hardware startup or anything, then you actually need to build a factory, or at least a workshop where you can build prototypes. And there's a lot more that's involved than just writing a piece of software.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see that. I think the trend is more and more that you actually also see some cool hardware that's being developed, at least also around Helsinki. We encountered some startups that were really doing some cool prototypes in hardware, and some of them are even reaching a more global level, I would say.
Yeah, and it's also not just technical hardware in terms of computer technical, but general machinery, just people getting creative, using their knowledge, their skills from their previous jobs to create their own ideas, fulfilling their dreams. And it's really cool to see that happen more and more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's one company that we had contact with when it comes to tooling. I think they are right now getting their patents right, so let's not talk about it much more. But other hardware companies that we were in contact with were Catchbox. If you want, look them up on Twitter, and you will also find all the links in the show notes on our website. Just check the description on your podcast client of choice. They invented a throwable microphone, so it's for engaging the audience after some big talks. At the end, when it's the Q&A time, for example, they would just have this cube that can be branded for the event even, and it has a microphone inside which puts itself to mute while it's being thrown around, so you can easily throw it around. It's a big cushion, so nobody gets hurt, and it's quite a playful way of having good audio and engaging your audience in the best possible way. And then another company that we were working together with a little bit was Lilu. They made some really, really cool children's night lamps. It's stuffed animals, different types, and they have some lights inside, and the children can interact with them. And just by stroking the back of those small stuffed animals, the light dim up and down, and they help children to sleep better. So it's really, really cool to see that actual prototypes are being built and not just another piece of software.
Maybe we still move to software, though. Luki, you have been doing a lot of research in terms of big data software. You looked into the Amazon AWS systems. What did you find out there? How did you find that?
Yeah, since a long time already as a company, we were looking a little bit into, of course, web services, as we are programming websites for a big part of our lives. So we were looking in different services where we could organize our hosting. And lately, I finally took the time to look properly into AWS, so the Amazon Web Services. And I went to an AWS Awesome Day in Helsinki. It was organized there. I think that was a little bit of the main factor, maybe, where I finally found the time. And there I spent one day listening to talks from different people on how to use AWS services. They were talking about the different aspects of it, how you manage them, what it means as a big company to possibly use their infrastructure instead of your own infrastructure. And it was all very, very interesting. And it's also very interesting for us. And I'm actually right now spending some time to get our whole infrastructure to run on the AWS infrastructure. I think in general, it's just a really smart way of handling the cloud. I mean, we probably all have heard sometime already that Amazon over the last years built a lot of those, a lot more infrastructure. They move away a little bit from having their Amazon store as their main business part, I would say. At least that's what they were telling us also in the Awesome Day. And it's more about providing infrastructure for other companies. The infrastructure, or like the services, started as a part they needed for their own operations, but now in some way the services are outgrowing their sales operations, like their operations of being a seller that delivers items to customers.
Yeah, and it totally makes sense for them since they have so much experience in building up these huge systems, because just imagine how much data they have to mm-hmm. store all those products in different languages, in with all the pictures, that there's just huge data moving around. And so if you already have the knowledge, why don't make even more money with it by renting it out to other companies who could never ever be able to establish such systems by themselves.
Exactly, and that's what they were also telling. They have so much knowledge. They have built such big service centers or infrastructure centers, server farms that in some way they not only probably have more knowledge than most of the companies could ever get, but also can do it at a lot better price, because of course they buy everything in such a big or in such big volumes that they can just negotiate the best prices possibly right now. And I think they really try to offer those prices also to their customers. Whenever they get stuff for cheaper, they try to bring it forward to their customers. And that's the feeling that I got altogether, that they're very customer-oriented. So they really listen to customer feedback. And if something is really needed from their systems, they try to integrate that into their offerings. They were telling now one of their newest services that they had, which is being used a lot, is to pretty much rent the whole data warehouse of them. So pretty much you have your own data center for 10 minutes, half an hour a day, or however long you need it. And then when you don't need it anymore, you say, I don't need it anymore. And you just pay for those 10 minutes, half an hour a day, which is just crazy. Because if you imagine you need to do some business report at the end of the month, like that needs to run a lot of processes to do calculations or whatever. You don't want to build up a whole server farm for yourself that has a huge investment cost. Initially, it has a huge running cost. Now you just pay for what you use that one time at the end of the month. And because they are so large, it's easy for them to move around their server farms and offer whatever you need, whenever you need it. It's a smart system, and let's see how they grow. But we right now, we are looking more and more into moving our stuff there, and possibly in the future I can tell more about how that works as well, because I have a little bit of a dream on having this perfect package that we can forward to our clients, where it's pretty much the key to the ready-built house, or like the key to the new car, where everything is just set up and it's scaling automatically, so it can deal with every kind of demand on the website and so on. And I think we can build it with those web services, and I'm halfway through. Next week, or in 2 weeks actually, I'm going to Stockholm most likely, where there will be the AWS Summit, which is a really big conference that they have. Their chief technical officer, CTO, is going to give a speech there as well. So let's see what he has to say, and there might be a few workshops. And maybe after that, in our next episode, I can talk more about how concretely we used all those services, and also what kind of cost that brings at the end of the month and so on. Because everything is variable, it's also a little tricky to know how much you actually are going to pay. But yeah, I want to share some proper figures with you when we actually have them.
Okay. Yeah, but we also didn't just work in the last weeks, even though it was mostly work, let's be honest. But we did a little bit of sports. At least I am trying this year as kind of, let's call it a New Year's resolution, even though it really isn't, because I kind of tricked myself by having monthly resolutions throughout the year. So every month I'm going to do something different, not just sports related, to just a little bit of self-improvement. I don't know if it's a kind of midlife crisis thing, or if it's just listening into my body and mind and wanting to improve somehow. And yeah, to kind of have a goal, I signed up for the Copenhagen Toughest Race, which is an obstacle race. Yeah, this toughest competition is in a lot of Nordic cities. When I decided to go to Copenhagen, it wasn't in Helsinki yet, but apparently it's also there in mid of August. And yeah, it's going to be a really crazy obstacle race with about 40 obstacles. They include all kinds of monkey bars, so you hangle yourself above some mud or whatever, and then you go through some ice baths, and you have to carry some very big tires and do all this crazy shit. It's kind of a army camp 2.0 race.
Yeah, I already said I'm not going to take part in this. Initially, I was tempted, but then I've heard about the ice bucket you need to run through after rolling yourself in mud. And then I said, no, thanks.
Yeah, but I think some other friends will still join me, at least from the office. Tom and Lenny said they would be part of it. So I strongly hope I'm not the only one.
We will come and cheer for you, Toby. That I can promise.
Sounds really nice. Yeah, another thing I would like to do. No, I wouldn't like, but I would like to have it on my achievement list. Would be to do a triathlon, but just a very short one. So just the Olympic one, which is a quarter of Ironman. But let's see, I just hate swimming. That's a really big problem.
Yeah, it's good that we're doing sports, I guess, with all that work that's necessary. I took a little easier sports than you did. I started my disc golf season, which is really nice. It started being sunny in Helsinki again, so I took the chance to go outside and throw a few discs. And I even bought myself some portable disc basket. that I brought to Italy, where I am right now, to also have some practice sessions around here. Because unfortunately, disc golf is not a very popular sport anywhere but in the Nordics, at least in Europe, from what I can tell so far. And I would like to make it one. So I already got all my friends into playing it, and I think it's planting seeds here and there, and sooner or later we will have it as a proper sport.
Yeah, but it's not. It can also be dangerous because if I remember correctly, last time we went, and when you threw the frisbee into the tree, and we had to lift the big the tree to kick the frisbee from the other tree, I kind of ripped my shoulder while doing that. So, of course. You have to use your brain like in everything else. So maybe it wasn't the most clever thing to lift the tree with my semi-working shoulder.
Yeah, I'm so far spare from incidents in playing disc golf, which is good for me because usually I tend to hurt myself a lot. But maybe let's go to our next topic that's about hurting one of us a lot. Toby, you did some research. What was it on?
Yeah, it's about my eyes. Not just my eyes, but eyes in generally. Well, my eyes suck. So I decided I want to laser them because I really don't like glasses. And just the idea of being dependent on glasses really... it disgusts me. And also contact lenses, to buy that stuff all the time, put them out at night. I just imagine falling into bed after a long day and then, my lenses are still in there. So I have to get them out and to get up again. I really don't like that. So I decided I'm going to laser my eyes. I will do that in Helsinki. And I did a little bit of research there. There are different methods. And for example, the oldest one is called...
Just a moment. This is a trigger warning. If you cannot deal with terrible pictures in your head, skip for probably 5 minutes or to the next chapter.
Really? 5 minutes? Okay. The oldest method, which is out in the market still, is called PRK. And with that method, you basically... You shoot a laser straight into the eye. And yeah, maybe I should explain first of all what's happening with lasering. So you have the cornea, which is the transparent skin in front of the eye. And that one, the angle on how it's bent affects your vision. So if the angle is a bit wrong, you have to... cut a little bit away from that cornea so that you see sharply. You can do that in different ways. And as I said, the oldest method is this PRK, which is just basically burning the cornea to the point till you see properly. And in a very rudimentary way, you also sometimes have to use a scalpel to cut away physically from the basically from the surface of the eye, which is, this is kind of cruel. I witnessed the surgery of my dad where they did this. Well, I wouldn't recommend this. Apparently, it hurts a lot. But luckily, nowadays, there are newer methods, and the method I will doing it with is called the smile method. I hope I'm going to smile after that one. And with that method, they just make a very small cut on the side of that cornea, and then they laser you within the cornea, and then a part of the lens of the cornea material is popping out. So you basically have no open wound on the eye, which is really nice. And so the risk of getting an infection, which is would of course be horrible, is very, very low. You don't have to touch the eye with any kind of surgical knives or anything. So also the psychological barrier before this surgery is much lower than the with the traditional methods. And apparently the doctor told me it takes about 10 seconds per eye. So it's really, really fast.
It goes this fast.
It goes really this fast.
Burning it out and burning, that's it.
And then you take out the part which shouldn't be there in the cornea, and then it's done. And I was also amazed at the preparatory the preparatory doctor's appointments I had. You basically just look into machines, and the machines analyze your eyes. You see with different color scales how different layers of your eye don't work properly, apparently, be it the retina behind in the eye, so where the vision really comes from, or also the lens, and also the veins in the eyes, how the blood supply works and everything. So it's really, really professionally done, and all practically everything is machinery today. So I was really amazed compared to years ago, where you still looked at the stupid numbers or letters on the walls. These times are over.
Okay.
Yeah,
I have not done any eye tests in a long time. I'm still happy that my eyes are working.
Yeah.
I hope I don't need to do any in a long time. But it's interesting to see how all this develops, because, as you said, there were some cruel methods not so long ago or still in use. So it's cool to see that it's actually becoming something easy that your body can hopefully deal with.
Yeah, for me, just the bad vision became really annoying for once, for example, in presentations. Either when you sit in a presentation, you don't see the slides properly, or when you hold a presentation and you don't see the faces of the people properly, it makes it much more difficult to communicate with them. Mm-hmm. And the next thing was TV and also playing video games on a console. I just couldn't do that because I couldn't see properly. So on this that distance, it was really difficult.
Talking about TV, I think I would like to share some TV show recommendation. I started watching Gotham. It's set in the city Gotham, as the name implies, which is the city that Batman plays, so all the Batman movies. And this TV show is about the origin stories of all the of Batman and all the Batman villains. So it's set in a time when Batman is still very young. Actually, in the first episode, I'm not going to spoil much. That's the episode where the parents of Bruce Wayne / Batman are being killed. And then it starts introducing lots of characters that I at least somehow knew from the Batman movies or from the old Batman shows. So it's really, really cool. And the show is done in a very, very good way. I really like the way the pictures are taken. So the cinematography is really, really nice. The storybooks are really nice. And there is always in some way the big story. So solving the murder case of the Bruce of the Wayne of the Wayne parents, and but then there's always one case that pretty much closes within one episode or maximum of two episodes. So there's always short-term solving of things and also the long-term big story. And I think they did a really, really good job of balancing it all out. The story plays over, or maybe the main character of the whole show is one police investigator, which is quite fun because the actor used to play in OC California. So there he was the pretty boy, but here he's the kind of badass policeman. He's Gordon, so also the policeman that you later on get to know in the Batman movies or TV shows, but this is him being young and being the only one that doesn't like all the corruption around the police office and governor and so on and so on. But it's really, really cool, and it's nice to see this transfer of a character or of an actor into a completely different character.
Sounds really cool. When did it start? How many seasons
are there? I think it's a really recent show. It perhaps started last year, end of last year, but I, from what I know, the first season isn't over yet. So it's really a new TV show. The second season is planned, and the third one as well, I think. But it's DC Comics who tried to finally launch some projects on their own to fight back a little against Marvel, because they did a good job over all the last years with Iron Man and the Avengers and everything, and DC never really took off so far. So I think this is them really having found a good way of doing it.
Yeah, this sounds really interesting. I totally have to look into that. Is it also on Netflix? Or
it's not yet. No.
Not yet. Okay.
You need to buy it from iTunes or
okay,
something similar.
Yeah, I also started to watch a TV show, or I kind of dabbed into it. It's called Black Mirror. It's not so recent. It's a British anthology series, which means that every episode has its own cast, its own separate story. So it's kind of a lot of single movies, yeah, maybe short movies, which just have one common theme. And the common theme is kind of a negative outlook on technology development. So not really what I would be about, because I have quite a positive attitude to technology. But they really took also some quite clever developments and picked mm-hmm. them out and demonstrated the dangers that some technologies will or could bring to us in the future. And especially the third season of the third episode of the first season, to me, really was really appalling to me. It was about a future of Google Glasses, but mm-hmm. it wasn't glasses. It was an implant in your head, which enabled you to memorize every moment you saw. So you basically have perfect memories of everything, and you could also share those memories, maybe on TV screens, or you could just send them to other people. And they just took a very everyday life situation of a couple. I also won't spoiler you now with all the yeah. details, but of a guy, he has a job interview and records, of course, everything that goes on there, what goes well, what doesn't, and also of his relationship to his girlfriend who had been unfaithful, and he kind of found out, and how, because he knew that she saved those memories of being with the other guy, drove him crazy. And I don't have to tell more about it, but just imagine if you remember every possibly bad moment in your life, and you can constantly reanalyze it and relive it, it will most likely drive you crazy. So we really have to look out where we are going with these kind of technologies and how we are dealing with this.
I can totally share that feeling, because there is something that does drive me crazy right now, which brings us to the rant of the week. Today we would have loved to share with you some insight on conference systems or how to hold conference calls. And we don't, but we will talk about it now in the rant of the week. Toby, what happened?
Yeah, we wanted to introduce the Chromebox system from Google at the clients, which sounds like a really nice system. I also saw it when it works, so that part is positive. So the system itself would be really nice. You can do conference calls from a computer, a small computer which is attached to a TV, and you have the whole system with video camera, microphone and everything. So you basically just plug it on, connect it to a Google account, and it works. And the bad part is, well, it isn't available in Europe, and Google's support was just so extremely bad. It drove me crazy. I wrote to them 4 times, never got a reply. Then I had to write to them from a different Google account with a support chat where they told me, they aren't really responsible for that. That's their hardware department, and they don't really have a support. And, well, wasn't helpful at all. Then, because I kept bugging them, I got a call at some point from some Google representative of this Chromebox thing, who also didn't know, first of all, in which countries this Chromebox is available. Apparently in Italy it isn't, and also in Finland it isn't. And also that they didn't know when it would launch and how it would launch and anything. I have never seen anything so unorganized, and it really pissed me off because I would have liked to test this device, and I just don't understand why it can be available in some countries and not in others, and why they aren't organized about how to launch it in general and how to communicate it internally.
It's always the most frustrating when you want to spend money on something, but you can't because of some reasons that you don't understand, and the people telling you about them doesn't either. So, yeah, let's see if we can maybe come back to this at some later time.
Yeah.
This brings us to the end of today's episode. We hope you liked it. Please subscribe to our podcast at buncon.com/podcast, and also don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Buncon. And tune in next time when we find out if Toby can still see. And I will go into more detail about AWS and tell about my new findings in the AWS summit. Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye bye. See you next time.